The following tape was made with Florence Linney Ingle in her home on Bear Ridge. She grew up in Little Bear Ridge and knew almost all of the people in the Troy and Kendrick area in the early days. Her father was a farmer, and she married a farmer, King Ingle, and many of her memories and stories are on this tape of the days of horse farming, thrashing crews, fruit growing, early schools, and cattle rustlers. When did you come to the county?
In 1884. We came by train from Gridley, California, that area anyway. Gridley was our county seat at that time. And they called it an immigrant train. They were mostly immigrants on it. It wasn't very fancy, you know, and our seats were not really upholstered. They had good seats in there, but they could have stoves too, you know. I guess with the immigrant trains, they always had the stoves in them for heating in those days. They used wood. Anyway, I was only 2 years old. And one thing I remembered on that train, I was seeing these strange people, and they were always interesting to me. I'd go from one seat to another, and I suppose I'd gaze up in their faces, you know. And the one lady, not just across the aisle from where we were sitting, she handed me out an orange. I didn't know it was an orange. I had heard of lemons, but I didn't know about oranges. I was only 2 years old, you know. And I took it over to my folks, and my mother took it, "Oh, it's an orange," she said. But that was the first time I'd ever seen an orange. I don't know whether it was growing in California at that time or not. That was way back in 1884. I doubt very much that they were growing. They might have been trying some orchards out or some trees out, but the oranges came later. Of course, they grew lemons. That's the reason why I thought it was a lemon. It was yellow. I had never seen an orange.
Why did your father leave the area down there?
Well, this father had grown up in Missouri, and he was interested in stock back there. And here in this Feather River in California, it was rich farmland. And Father, I forget now how many acres he had there. It was a large area. And the farming's quite heavy, and he had to do it all with horses in those days. And he did raise good crops, but out of seven crops, he lost three. The river came down from Oroville, you know, down through there, down through Gridley. We were about 8 miles from Gridley. And that was all a nice valley through there. Well, Father's land was just in the right place for the water where the levees would break up there. The miners throw up levees, and they'd break and let the water down on our farmland. So Father lost three crops out of seven. And that was a little discouraging to him. Our crops were heavy, though, and he raised very good grain. Had very heavy yields on the grain. But this was advertised. He'd grown up in the stock country, and he wanted to get into the stock business. So Idaho, and he was great to read, and Idaho had been advertised even down there as a new stock country. It would be a good stock country. So he had a brother-in-law. My mother's brother had moved into that section on Little Bear Ridge where we moved. And they'd been living there 3 years before we went there. So they were quite well established, and that was one reason why we went there, because this brother of hers, we knew him very well, and and she thought a great deal of him. Even a Civil War veteran. But I should go on with my story. We found it all right there on Little Bear. We settled. We came to Moscow and stayed overnight there. We perhaps stayed several days there. And then we moved out to our homestead on Little Bear Ridge.
What was the name of his brother-in-law?
My brother, my
Lear. He would be your
my
uncle.
He was my uncle. He was his name was Porter. Liddell Porter. He had come from Tennessee, where my mother had lived in Tennessee. And they had lived in Tennessee, but they had come west, and they were living down near Dayton. But they had moved up here before we came from California. So he was one of the earliest of the settlers on the Bear Ridge. I have a list of names. I have the data on when they moved here. Would you be interested in that?
We can get that later.
Okay then. I have them in there, and I'll have to look them up, but they're in my little jar in there. Well,
Did your father take out a homestead when he came here?
Yes, he took a homestead, but the farmland that we bought, father had sold his property down there, and he had some money, you know, to, we didn't come here as paupers, you know, without anything, and he bought livestock that he could get along with on the farm. Yeah, bought a couple of cows, and two horses at first was all he could get, and he finally picked up more. So he began farming the land there. It was good farmland. And he set out, one of the first things he did, and he did that before even we came. He came up here before the family, the summer before, and he set out an orchard. He found the land where he was going to settle it. Or his homestead, and he set up an orchard, a big orchard. He set up all kinds of trees. He set up pear trees, and apple trees, peach trees, and prune trees. He had quite a good city. He must have had about 10 acres of prunes on it. And these Italian prunes, they were just planting them in this area. People putting up dryers, people that had come before that had their prunes already, they were putting up dryers and drying their prunes. And it was quite a sale for dried prunes, because in those days there was lots of demand for things like that over in the mines. And they come to our local stores and fill up at our local stores for their supplies for the mines. So there's good sale for prunes, and father thought he could dry prunes. Well, he built a nice little dryer on the place. And getting along fine, John. He came in for supper one evening, looked out, and our dryer was all ablaze, so we lost all of our dried prunes, except to some that they bought into the house. Oh, that was a kind of a blow to us. He didn't go to work. The dryer had, he put on, he had been back to Missouri, and he'd gotten money from their estate back there. And I think his father had died, I believe. And they allowed him, you know, his part of his share in the estate. And he put most of that money that he'd gotten into that prune dryer, so he felt pretty badly that money.
Well, how did it catch?
We never knew. We thought it was set afire. My brother had just come up from there, and he always looked at it good. Well, he'd been taking care of the stove, the furnace down there. And we looked out the door, and it was all ablaze. We had some pretty treacherous neighbors at that time. There was a one man, especially with stretchers. His wife told us about him because he was mean to her, very mean to her. She was a good woman. She had relatives out here, Troy, but he was mean to her and sort of cruel. And of course, she had a hard feeling toward him. So he ran off with another woman, so she came up to our house and she told us all the troubles, and she told us all about what he was like. That's the way we got to find out about him. She said he belonged to the Black Hand group. You've heard of that, I suppose. It's just a dirty bunch, you know. It was among some of the Swedes and different people that moved in here. I didn't know of anyone else but Roy, but his wife told us that he belonged to that Black Hand bunch.
What did they do?
Oh, they just get it in for people and they'll just do mean things just on purpose. Not that they have a grudge, but just because they might not be the same nationality, you know, for that matter. No, they're just naturally mean, and I think I don't know much about it, but I know it's a very bad. It's a very bad group, one of the very worst.
Was it part of that Swede and Norwegian?
It's a Swede. He was Swede. Mm-hmm. He was Swede, and he was an uncultured Swede, and he didn't. He could speak a broken English. His wife was much more intelligent than he was, or very informed. She was a good woman. She was a very good woman, but I think he made life quite miserable for her, or she wouldn't have told us. And she was so broken down about his running off with this other woman, leaving her there. I think he was gone a month or so.
But he came back.
He had a pickup and he finally came back. And the woman came back to her husband. They lived on an adjoining place. So they left this Hammond, that was his name, and her name was Hammond. They left our neighborhood then. Of course, they couldn't live there after an episode like that.
This was the Swede? Yeah.
No, they weren't. I think the Hammonds were Norwegian on one side. Mm-hmm. I don't think they were on both sides. I just don't know them well. I didn't know them well. But they had two children, very nice children. They attended school with us. But she was just a kind of, I don't know. She lived in Troy, and Troy was an awful wild town.
Was it?
Yes. In the early day, it was an awful wild town.
Why is that?
Well, so often in these little western towns, a lot of people would move into them. It just seemed like all of them had some very tough characters in them.
Were there any?
You don't have them now, those days, nowadays. Our towns are so clean compared to what they used to be. We don't have that sort of thing.
Were there any characters in particular that you remember?
Well, I wouldn't like to mention them.
Well, you wouldn't have to mention them by name.
Uh-huh.
You just you know, things that people did.
Well, I just never dwelt on anything like that. I used to hear it all, but I was one never to repeat things much, and that was one of the rules in our home life that. They could discuss things with us at home, but we weren't to discuss with neighbors. Or, you know, it makes trouble in the neighborhood. People can pack things and just keep a neighborhood all in uproar. You know? But mother was. They didn't believe in talking about your neighbors at all, saying anything. You know, my mother and father were exceptional people. My mother had had very good bringing up. She lived in Tennessee. And she had they were Scotch, they called them Scotch-Irish, but they were Scotch people, and they're very strict in bringing up their children and teaching them the Bible and that sort of thing. They believed in education. The families, as far as they could be educated in those days, were educated. My mother's sister married a doctor that was in the neighborhood there. And
which doctor was that?
His name, Dr. Bailey. Mm-hmm. was my mother's uncle. Her sister had married this Dr. Bailey there in Tennessee. And he lived in Greenville, Tennessee. And his practice was in the surrounding country. And in those days, they rode horseback when they'd go to the country. And mother said she thought so much of Dr. Bailey because when he had to come out to the country, he always came to their house because she was they were relatives, you know, and eat dinner with them because he liked her mother's cooking. And her mother was a wonderful cook, I guess. So I heard them say that she was, and so often that she would, I've heard her mention things that she, that her mother's mother cooked. And we always thought my mother was a wonderful cook. Most people that came there always were pleased at with the food that she cooked. And she said, oh, she couldn't cook like her own mother. You know, maybe she wished she could cook as good as her own mother. And so maybe that's what she thought, but everybody thought mother was a good cook.
Do you remember the town of Troy being started?
Yes, yes, it was. It was just a, we used to go to, we had some, there was a sawmill out in the flat on the other side of Troy, that meadow out there, what do they call it? Meadow, out on the other side of Troy.
Now, there's a west meadow. West of Troy or north,
yes,
of Troy?
Yes, it's west, well, a little northwest of Troy. There's a meadow out there, and we had some, you see, when we first
You mean about where the ball field is now, somewhere in there?
It was there out in the woods, up the valley there.
Oh.
Yes,
yeah.
up the valley there. And there was a creek came down there. I forget the name of that creek. That's a large creek that comes down and comes out the north of Troy and comes down there. I think that there's a creek that still comes down through there. Anyway, there was a sawmill out there. And there was people that worked at the sawmill were good friends of my father and mother. There was always, usually in those days, there's a little, the church usually held them together. There was a little Baptist church on Burnt Ridge, and we all attended church from wherever Little Bear Ridge to Burnt Ridge to attend church out there at Sunday school. And they didn't have preachers to go around everywhere. Finally, it was different, but in early day, I don't know, when I was a youngster, just about from 3 to 4 years old, I don't know if I was any older than that or not. No, I wasn't any older than that. We drove there to Sunday school. Father was superintendent of the Sunday school, and other people from Little Bear Ridge drove out there to Sunday school on Burnt Ridge, and just a little log cabin, there on the side of the road. I think the highway goes up just about where the cabin used to be. I could point it out. Some people by the name of Morgans lived just across the road, up on a hill above there. And there's one, I think there's still in Moscow, a man by the name of Morgan that belongs to that same family. I'm sure he does. Lives out in the north part of Moscow. I guess they could tell you more than I could because they had lived on Burnt Ridge and raised their families. And this man grew up there. He's just a boy that I knew.
Well, how did the town of Troy sort of get itself going? What was it like before there was a town there?
There was a man by the name of Palmer. He was the big banker in Lewiston.
Did you know him? Baldwin?
No, my folks did. Yes, they knew me very well. He was I think he was Jewish. I don't know, but he came from New York to Lewiston, and he built a big saloon there and a big mercantile house building. And he made most of his money to begin with. They say that he started on a barrel of whiskey. A barrel of whiskey, and he divided that one barrel up into several, now that's but that's what they told us.
That's the story they tell about it.
Yes, that's the story they tell about it, that he got his start from selling a barrel of whiskey there in Troy.
In Troy or in Lewiston?
In Lewiston, yes. Volmer, they tried awful hard to get something named for him in Lewiston. But he was a very grasping man, and he didn't come there to build a place up. He came there to make money himself, and he did. He made money over hand over fist. And people would, he put up a store, a mercantile store there, and people would come there and run bills, and finally they couldn't pay their bills, and he picked their land. He owned 8,000 of acre on Potlatch Ridge and around Genesee over here. He and that's where he got into people's farms. Now, that wasn't good business, you know. That was good business for him, to get money for him. But to build up a country, that is not the way to do. If you're going to build up a country, you have to build up the farms and the farmers that instead of getting everything they have, then he'd rent those farms to people that weren't usually especially good farmers. And the land got all run down, all around Lewiston, over here on the at Genesee, that country was just a weed patch. And because he didn't get the best farmers on there, just people that... Well, he'd get the farm from, and that's about all he wanted. He was the mayor, and he owned here all that land. And so, Bomber didn't have a very good day when he came to come, Troy, and then he started that bank. That was the put up money for that.
He started the First Bank of Troy.
First, they didn't call it the First Bank of Troy then. I don't know about Bomber Bank. I think they called it the Bomber Bank. I'm sure it was called the Bomber Bank. You can inquire some of those people.
Was there a little town there?
It was a little village. It was just, people were built all over the hillsides there, and they had a church. I think the Lutherans had the main church there. I don't know. I think there was a Methodist church at one time. But people got down on him because he was just like that. He started in at Troy, just like he did around around Genesee and Lewiston, getting people in debt to him and then taking the property. Well, that's no good banker. No banker, good banker will do that. Now I'll tell you how. Just to tell you, you don't need to use this for a note, but just to contrast the difference between a banker of that sort and a banker that will build. Martin Thomas moved into Kendrick here. He lived on American Ridge. He made real good on American Ridge. And he took over the bank. It was one of the first banks of Kendrick. I forget what they called it.
The Farmers?
No, it wasn't. It was before the Farmers. It was the one down there where about where Frank Martin's, about where the post office was. Yes. There's about where their first bank was. Troy of Kendrick. But Martin Thomas began to help the farmers. He found, give them advice and tell them what they could do and what they couldn't do. We had farmers that would just buy anything he'd buy and get it on time. Well, Thomas didn't believe in that. He saw that they paid for what they got. And that's what built up Kendrick, the people around Kendrick. Yes, absolutely. The bank in Kendrick, that bank in Kendrick's been like that ever since. They try to see if a farmer's not doing the right thing, they give them advice that they should have and tell them what to do, or to quit rather than take the property. No, I don't think Martin Thomas would have taken the man's property for anything. He just started a new trend. And I think Frank Grandbocky's followed the same around Troy, just the same, because he worked. He started in under Martin Thomas there at Kendrick. I don't think he liked Martin Thomas very well, because he was maybe a little grouchy, and he wasn't very stylish. he wore good clothes, but he didn't think very much of clothes, about clothes, but how he looked. He was just no farmer there. And he did have a mind, though. He had a good financial mind, because my husband was a director of the bank there for over 20 years, I think. and he never did have anything to say about Martin Thomas, only The only thing I heard him say about Martin Thomas that he didn't like, he said he put too much confidence in some people, that people that he wouldn't have confidence in. But as long as King was there, he always, my husband, he would advise Thomas about people. And he would take his word for it, because my husband was very good at judging people. Exceptional. I doubt if they've ever had a better man in Canada for just being able to judge people and still get along with them and not make them angry, as my husband was. Because I know when King died, there was a write-up in the paper. It pleased me because they said that King Ingle was, the favorite of this the entire area. He had a good name, you know, and most friends. I don't know just how it was worded. I have it someplace, the article. But anyway, they give a very, very good reputation for building, you know, getting along with the people. And he was good. He did. I know after he passed away, several of the young men came and this community came to me and told me, he says, you know, King, it was just bothering me. There was a lot of wildness in the country at that time, and the drinking and the leading boys astray. And King was just against that. He'd been well brought up. And he'd tell them where they'd go, what had happened to them, if they kept on. One young man, he was a member over here, I can tell you this, but I didn't want you to put it in the writing. He told King, and you know, they were great to get together and drink. And King, they offered King some. King said, oh no, he didn't think he wanted any. Well, this young man said, he said, if you don't drink, you can't associate with us. This is what King wants to associate with, you know. He said, you won't have any friends in this neighborhood. Well, he walked against King as long as he was here, I guess. But he finally got tired of it, I guess, and left. He owned this place over here and went to California. He finally died, you know, and just kept on his old bullheaded ways, I guess. He was German. Some of them don't ever change. They get something in their head. They thought that if you were going to be a man, you had to drink beer and liquor with them. So, but they didn't get King to do that. King was just as straight as he could be. All he might take a sup of whiskey or brandy, you know, but you know to drink. He didn't care for those things. He hadn't been brought up that way. He wasn't afraid he'd get started drinking drink because he wouldn't do that. But then most of them would, you know, they get started and then they never quit. It sort of ruins them in a way, I think. Ruins their character. Because they get associated with that element of people and makes life just a little bit harder for them than if they had gone their own way. Most of them. You find out, and you just couldn't find a better man than King Ingle. People that had lived here in New England would tell me that. He was my husband. I've never ever seen another man that could ever take his place with me. I knew just how fine he was, and how good and how interested he was in people. It wasn't that he wanted to criticize people, but he didn't want to see them ruin themselves by taking up things that they'd make habits of that they probably would never break. And cling to them like during the money. Well, that's the kind of a man my husband was. So we had a happy life together. He was a good worker and a good planner and had a good business head on. That was the kind of man I liked. I wanted a man that was doing, could do something, wanted to do something.
Could you tell me a bit more about the early days of Troy?
Well, I didn't live there, so someone that lived there could tell you so much more.
Well, how about just early days
we were about 20. Oh, Little Bear Ridge. Because I lived at mm-hmm. Little Bear Ridge. I knew the people, all the people on Little Bear Ridge.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, some of our first settlers there were Swedish people. They were very good Swedish people, though. There weren't enough of them that they were Flemish. And we built a church on Little Bear Ridge. It was a Methodist church went up there. Those people always attended church at our church, at the Methodist church. That was the only church on Little Bear Ridge. And that's what I liked about the Swedish. They were not Flemish because the church that they had grown up with, well, they didn't refuse to come to our Methodist church on Little Bear Ridge. I respected them for that. And there were churches, there were Scandinavian churches up north in this north country, north of Little Bear Ridge, back up there. And they used to attend church up there later, quite a video. But they weren't built, but they had churches in Troy, of course, first, or on Little Bear Ridge. Our church was built earlier.
Did people in general get along pretty well out there?
Yes. There were always a few cantankerous ones in a neighborhood that was selfish and wanted to run things and be bossy. But people kind of ignored it. We didn't. There wasn't much quarreling. I suppose I could think back enough, I could recall some scraps, but I didn't follow that line very much.
Did people cooperate a lot when they worked?
I think they're very cooperating. Yes, help each other in early day. That's the only way they had to. They got along. They didn't have hired men as a rule. Father used to hire some Swedish people up the country. You see, we had a man by the name of Eriksson that worked for us. He'd come and work in the summertime. He was a good hand, a very good hand. I think when he first came down on the farm there, he'd never ridden horses. And my brother Charlie was always full of fun, and he told him, he said, how to get on him. Well, he got on with his head toward the tail. And finally, Charlie laughed at it and told him how to ride, though. But that's the way he got on the horse when he first got on, facing the tail. They didn't know about guiding the horse or anything about it. It's either a horse or just a new one. I don't think Charlie would tell anything on facing the tail. I don't think he would. Well, I wouldn't say he didn't, but I wasn't out there. I didn't hear it. So. Charlie was full of tricks. But he used to, they used to like to talk to him and speak and learn English from him. He liked to teach them English, and that's the one thing that Charlie got the biggest kick out of, was teaching English to the Scandinavians that came there that couldn't speak English, and they liked it too. I know, he said he even helped older women speak English, taught him, he worked with him too, and he taught some of his first English. That was my oldest brother.
Did you attend school there on Little Bear?
On Little Bear Ridge. I attended until I was, that was the only school I attended until I went down to Kendrick to attend high school. We'd just go there year after year. We didn't have very long terms, you know. We'd seldom get clear through a book that we'd started in during the school year because the school years weren't over 3 months or something like that. And then we'd have to go 2 or 3 years to get a year of school by just short terms. And so I had gotten so I just knew the elementary subjects by heart. That is what we have in our country schools, elementary subjects like grammar and physiology and arithmetic is one of the main ones. That's on my. I like arithmetic, I think, better than anything else. But I like grammar too. I don't know how many grammars I went through before. I even went down to high school. And when I got tired going to the country school, I said, I'm not going to this country school anymore. And now my father said, the older girls, the normal. You go down to the normal, and they had a preparatory at the normal. Two years preparatory, two years professional. And they would do the high school work in 2 years there at the in preparatory. So he sent my older sisters to Lewiston to go to the normal, but that's what they took. They hadn't had high school, so they had to have preparatory work. Well, I told them I was going to go to Kennedy School. So I got on the horse and I started in. We always had ponies to ride. I started in a riding school. I was riding right through the rain down there. So one of the women told me, she says, you know, I'd like to have you just to come and stay with me. Yes, I have my little boy and we go out in the evenings, quite a good deal. And your board will be free if you just come and stay with us. So I did. I stayed with them. Them was for several months, and then I finished up staying at another place. And babysitting with their children. One little boy, he wasn't quite old enough to be in school, but he liked to play checkers. That's the best, of course, he liked to beat all the time. So I would play, and I would see that he won. He won and win several games. And finally, I won. And oh, he gets so mad. Oh, he's just furious. And he thought he was winning, you know. But I was just letting him move so that he could win. His name was Fred Hamburg. He's still living. I was telling his sister, his folks have this meat business out of Troy. No, not at Troy, but in Moscow.
Oh, Davis?
No, not Davis, up on the hill. They live on the hill there. Oh, what are their names? I know their names well. Everybody knows them. They've been there for years and years. I don't know what their ads in the paper. But anyway, I was telling about him. Oh, yes. I let him read, and then he gets so furious that I let him, that I would win. And I'm telling his sister about it, and she was down there at Kendrick one day, and we ate dinner together. And I said, how's Clarence getting along? He was the oldest one in the family. See, she was a good deal younger than Clarence. I think that Clarence was 9 years old when she was born. And so I told her then about this playing checkers with him, and how he wanted to win all the time, and how mad he'd get when he didn't win. Well, she says he still likes to win. I thought that was good of her. I know Clarence would be one that wouldn't change, though, because he was just that way, and that stood out in that one trait of character. He wanted to win. And if he didn't win, he wasn't pleased. If his mother had taught him now to take it in good turn and not get angry when he won, but be pleased and be glad to see someone else win part of the time. But then, no, he wasn't that way. He wanted everything.
How long did you live on Little Bear Ridge with your folks?
I lived there until when I was married in 1909. And from that time on, I lived over here. Mm-hmm. I was married at my home there on Little Bear Ridge in June the 23rd, 1909.
Your father died there on the ranch, didn't he?
Yes. The cause of his death. The horses ran far away down the road.
Wait, what horses were these?
The team that he was driving. Mm-hmm. The team that he was driving ran for a short distance down the road, and then they started up the steep hillside to the left. That would be on the same side that the watering trough was, but it was farther on down the hill. And that up that steep hillside, ran way up there, and they turned abruptly and turned around and came back down the hill. See, there was a big steep bank there. If you've been up the Little Bear Ridge grade, you know how it's like there, where that spring was. And the wagon hit the road and overturned there and threw Father off on a pile, on the rock pile just on the edge of the road. And he was not speechless, and he never did get his speech back. So he doctored for many years, and then he lived, see, did I say 2 years or 3 years? I think I told you that before. Two years, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2 years that he lived. And he never did get his speech back, but it injured the nerves of his throat and his chest, and he got bubblar paralysis, what they call bulbar paralysis. That is a disease of the nerves, and a set of nerves dies each time. And if you look it up in a medical book, you see, it's a slow, it doesn't come all at once, but they just start in dying, these sets of nerves, and until it finally gets them out. So that's, he lived 2 years with that bulbar paralysis. That's the way it acts. That's what the doctors told us, that bulbar paralysis acted. Two sets. One set dies at a time until the last set of nerves. It would be the one that would control your heart. And so he lived 2 years, and he would, all of that time though, Father could get a pencil in his fingers like this, and he would write and tell when they said the thing you want to tell us or ask us, or you can drive. So his mind was, it didn't affect his mind at all. It was just the nerves of his spine and the everything.
Was Kendrick a pretty good little town most of the time?
Pretty prosperous little town.
Or was it as wild as Troy?
Oh no. No, I think they had their wild ones there. But I don't know how wild Troy is, though. I've never lived there, so
it's not wild anymore.
No, I didn't think it was. I think they have some pretty good churches there, haven't they? And people attend church pretty well, don't they? I think Troy is a pretty fine little town now. It's improved, but I think a great deal over what it was in those days. They did make discrimination there, I think, though, in people that were. I think that people who were intelligent and trying to build up Troy, they respected them greatly. I think Frank Green was respected a great deal in Troy. Frank brought his father-in-law, his wife's. I knew his wife. I used to go to school with Frank Green's wife, Rita. Her name was Rita Herbert. The Herberts weren't thought very much of, but Rita was just always a wonderful person. The French wife, I knew her as a girl, and she was a very sweet person, very, very funny. I used to walk to school with her, always home from school, as far as it came down home. I always walked with Rita Herbert, and I was very, very fond of her, and I never knew anything wrong with Rita Herbert. She was just a fine person. But Frank Green married her. She was a She was very attractive little girl. She was young for him. But then, I guess, didn't she die before he did? It seems to me like she did. He was much older, not quite a few years older than she was. And they lived in farms on Little Bear Ridge where my folks farmed.
You were saying about earlier about cattle gangs, cattle rustlers.
There were cattle rustlers, but we lost quite a good many cattle, but we never traced them down.
They never knew who they were.
No, never knew. We never found out. We had a suspicion because of the cattle gang. There was a ring and it was from here to Colfax, and Julietta was mixed up in that cattle business too, a great deal.
You think the ring was centered in Julietta?
I've been told there was. Yes, there were some of the very worst ones in Julietta. Because Julietta used to have a pretty tough name. They had a winery there, and they made beer too. They distilled beer there too. I guess they distilled beer. Don't care how they make it.
They brew it.
They brew it. They brew beer. That's right. Well, they had a beer brewery there too. So it was well supplied with liquor, and Kendrick had 3 saloons. So I knew women in Kendrick. They'd cross the street before they'd go in front of a saloon to dodge a saloon. They wouldn't even pass in front of a saloon. Women were that strict that in those days, a lot of them were. I wasn't so afraid about going past the saloon. I kind of liked to look at the pile of beer kegs that were standing out in front, just count them, see how many they were piling up. I was younger though. Yeah,
fun
and
counting
things.
One story I heard about this road out here, the road that goes down the grade of Big Bear here, was it the people on Potlatch Ridge wanted a new road, and the governor came up here, and the people from Bear Ridge sort of snatched the governor away and took him on a ride up this road here?
I never heard. I think that's all made up.
Okay, I didn't know.
I don't think. No, I'll tell you what happened. Down there in Boise, there was a boy that had grown up in Boise and lived there. King Martin Thomas was in the bank down there, and. This is inside information that I never told anybody. And he wrote up this boy that had lived there in Kendrick, and he was very well thought of. And he wanted to know what, you see, he was in with the roadmen down in Boise. He wanted to know what we thought of this road up Bear Ridge. He said, now people say they're building it up there just to favor King Ingle. Well, King wrote back and told him, if they put a road on across Big Bear Ridge, they couldn't go across Big Bear Ridge without crossing Ingle land, because our land spreads out from the far side over there, clear, very way down over in here, you see, clear down here to the Maury place. The Ingle lands, and so that's what I told them. So some people were saying King Ingle wanted just for himself, and trying to lay it on King, and King was in the bank, was a director of the bank down there, so he got the inside information. Now this is inside information. And that was what he told the boy, and this boy had something he could advise the person who was the chief man interested in building the highway up here. And he told him what King Woods had thought. So they made that on the Martin Thomas.
I think the story I heard wasn't about this highway, but it was about
The older one. No, I don't know about that, mm-hmm. the older one. Mm-hmm. Because that was just built by the county, mm-hmm. I think, in those days. Mm-hmm. I think the people of the county built those, all those early roads. Mm-hmm. They took their turns of working on the roads. And they built the roads and didn't get anything out of it. That was just these grades. The first grades we had made were built almost entirely by, well, they would have a road supervisor, and he might have been paid something. But I don't think they got any money out of the roads in the early days. I know my father had built lots of roads, and that's the way they did. They built the roads themselves. They get someone to site a road out for them where it ought to be, and then they just go ahead and they have their plows and diggers and shovels and things like that and go ahead and make the road. I know that road up Little Bear Ridge. Why, the first time I went over there, it was just wide enough for one of those big wagons to just make your head swim almost. Those banks of steep down below there. Mother couldn't stand it. She'd get out and walk behind the wagon because it was so steep. We had come from California where we had level roads, you know. And these hillsides didn't seem like a steep to us. We had just used to. So level there, we had a wonderful place there. Perhaps it was too bad we ever left, but still it was interesting there. It was very interesting.
Well, it sounded like...
I never regretted it somehow.
It sounds like when you came here, you got into a much... it was a much more pioneering sort of thing.
Yeah, that was, yes. We got into a mixed... We didn't have pioneering much down there, you know. That was all... that California had all been civil, and it was quite civilized at that time. We had some very fine neighbors down there, and our schools. Father was a director of the school, and they took a great deal of interest in their schools. At that time, when we came from California, it's supposed to have one of the best school systems in the United States. Because they had taken so much interest in their schools and building them up and having good teachers and the right kind of teachers. No, we that's what we missed when we came to Idaho. And no schools here at all. The schools had to build up after we came here. Just a little old log cabin there on Little Bear Ridge. And they use it for church and school too. Now that was, I just went to school there 1 year I visited the school. I went with my brothers and sisters and visited the school. But I didn't start in school until I was 7. Then we had a schoolhouse when I was 7 years old. They built a schoolhouse just across the road from the Nelson place, over on the south place there. The place south of Rose. You see who lives there now.
Across from Cherry Nelson place? Or?
Yes. Yes, just south. Just that road runs between the places. Yes, you know.
Benjamin place?
No, it didn't. Benjamin is on the north side. It was you on the south side. Yes, you know them. They're a Norwegian family that lives there. And one of them married one of the Emmett girls, one of the boys. He owns the old farm place that's...
I'm not sure.
Ryerson.
Oh, Ryerson.
Ryerson, yes. Ryerson's. I think they're Norwegians. And his wife, that Ryerson runs a place there, married an Emmett girl.
One of the Emmetts from Genesee?
That no, that lived there at on the Bear Ridge. You see a Pearl Long down here is her home is up there on the Bear Ridge. Not just north of where my folks the jump is off and out.
Well, your place was the place?
South of, I don't know whether the Benjamins live on it there or I don't. Emmett's own the Emmett land, but they rent it. They rent it.
Where was your place from Cherry Nelson?
Well, it was farther over to the south and to the east.
To the end,
we were on the lower end of the ridge.
Could you see the Cherry Nelson place from your place?
Oh, no. No. Well, I guess we could if we get up on a hill. Yes, we could, I think. But it wasn't very visible to us. It was then besides there's trees up there, lots of pine trees that was surrounding. We were over on the edge of the canyon, our home was. And that's where our home was. We had land farther in on the ridge, but our home was right on the rim of the canyon, around the canyon. We could do Big Bear Ridge better than we could Little Bear Ridge, or the north end of Little Bear Ridge. No, we had a highway up to Cherry Nelson Place. It wasn't Cherry Nelson Place, it was Dow Porter Place in the early days there. Lorenzo Dow Porter was the one that owned that place. And then he sold to my brother-in-law, Oscar Hogan, and Oscar Hogan sold to Cherry Nelson.
With all the land you had, you must have hired a lot of labor, didn't you?
No, we didn't have a lot of farmland. So much of ours lay in the canyon.
No, I mean after you and King were married.
Oh, after we were. No, we always had labor. We always had to have someone coming here.
I was wondering if we
would have a hired man.
Did you ever have the IWWs come in when you were...
No, we were never bothered with them. King didn't have any use for them. Mm-hmm. No, we didn't have any trouble with them. They wanted to control labor, didn't they? Wasn't that what the IWWs was?
Yeah, they were the... They call themselves One Big Union.
Oh, yes. No, the IWWs never bothered us much. We usually had a man. We'd get people so often in those days. We'd get Swedish people from the north that come down to farm. They loved to learn to farm, and they would do what you tell them. And most of our hired help, early hired help, were Swedish people. And they worked for a year after year. Then we'd probably go farther up now north up if. To that northern settlement up there, Hawkins used to come down there and plow for Father in the spring. Mandalika Hawkins, they were some of the earliest settlers up there.
Over around Potlatch?
No, it was what do they call that up there? For
Farmington?
No. Oh, I don't have a map, but I can show it right to you. Avon, north of Avon, north of Avon. But there's some people around that still that down here, Julietta, that used to live up there. They grew up up there.
About when do you think the towns, the Julietta and Troy in particular, about when do you think they started to sort of tame down a little bit?
Well, the railroad helped a great deal, getting the railroad through so people could haul their grain to the local markets and shipping. Anything like that helps your town. If any produce brought from the farms that's sold in the town helps to help build it. So I think the warehouse business helped. We had some awful, terrible warehouse people, but we had some good ones too. I think that helped to build in our school helped to build in the church helped to build Kendry. We had a good Methodist church at Kendry. We had some very good ministers.
Do you remember the Kendry fire?
Oh yes. Yes, I wasn't there's two or three fires there. One of the biggest fires was about 1904, I think. That was the year I graduated from high school there at Kendrick. But I was at home up on the little Bear Ridge, and I could see down there and see the fire burning. There was a doctor at our home at that time, and my sister was there, and her youngest boy had a cholera and phantom. He was doctoring. And that fire burned the drugstore in Kendrick. And he lost nearly everything in his office too, because that was right in joining the drugstore. So he had to move to Julietta. And they moved his practice down there to the drugstore at Julietta. Well, this little nephew of mine that had cholera and phantom was doctoring by Rothwell. They moved his medicine down there, and they sent the prescription down to Julietta and had it filled. And they filled it. Dr. Rothwell wasn't in the drugstore, you know, but the druggist filled the medicine, filled the prescription. And brought it up there, and the little boy began to get worse, and they called Dr. Rothwell again. And he came up, and he says, "Let me see what that medicine was." And he took the bottle, and he looked at it, and he cursed. Oh, Mother said he just walked the floor and cursed. He was a little rather profane man. He's a very smart man, but that was the way he had letting off his steam. And he said, "That child can't live. He'll die." And he did. He died in just 6 days.
Wrong medicine?
Yeah, wrong medicine.
Was it just a mistake?
They didn't know, you see. The druggist down there didn't feel it right. Gave the wrong medicine.
Did anything ever happen to the druggist for doing that?
Well, we